Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, and welcome to Psychic Teachers. I'm your host, Deb Bowen, and my lovely co-host, Samantha Fay, is off tonight. But I am thrilled and absolutely honored to have with me a wonderful guest tonight. I have Mary Mahoney, who is the host of a podcast called Chapters that I can't wait to tell you about. Welcome, Mary.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me, Deb.
Oh, I'm so glad you're here. So, folks, a while back, Mary invited me and Samantha to be on her one of her launch programs, actually, of her Chapters podcast to talk about books we love, because if you're a regular listener to our podcast, you know we're always talking about books. And it was so wonderful because Mary and I found this wonderful common ground with a children's book that we both love so much called The Witch of Blackbird Pond. And we just went off on this whole long tangent about that book for probably a long time, didn't we, Mary?
Yes, we did.
I know, it was great. It was just wonderful. And so Mary is a historian, and she studies the history of bibliotherapy, biblio meaning books, and the use of books as medicine. And we're going to talk a lot during this hour about what Mary means by books as medicine. She has a hugely broad interest in reading and in its history. And so what she does with her Chapters podcast is that she aims to tell stories of readers' lives through the books that have meant the most to them. And she interviews folks, and I'm going to get her to talk a little bit later about the kind of people she interviews and what she asks them to do as they come on to her Chapters podcast to talk about her books, the books that they love. So that's just wonderful what Mary is doing with this great podcast. And I hear tell it's growing and doing really well. Is that right, Mary?
That's right. Yeah, we're really encouraged and we're excited about where it's going.
Great. Wonderful. Okay. So can I start, Mary, by asking you kind of where you got the idea to do this podcast and how it's evolved over the time you've been running it?
Sure. Well, first I should say that I'm in grad school now and I'm getting my PhD in history and I'm working on my dissertation. And for anyone who's not familiar with that process, you have to kind of travel around to different archives and do research to help you basically write a book-long study on a history project that culminates with you getting a PhD. And so I'm working on a history of bibliotherapy, like you said, the history of the use of books as medicine. So I've been going around and reading through hospital records for any examples of times when doctors or librarians have prescribed books as a kind of medicine in all kinds of different settings. And so every place I've been going the past couple of years, I noticed that when I would go in and ask librarians, in particular, if they had anything on bibliotherapy, they would say, first of all, what's that word even mean? I've never heard of it before. And second of all, we don't have anything here for you on that. And I would say, well, bibliotherapy is the idea that books can act as a kind of medicine. And they would all say, oh, yeah, sure, I'm familiar with that idea, but we don't have anything for you. And I would go through their records, and sure enough, I would find really interesting examples. And I would notice that as I was sitting at a table, say, doing research, one by one, librarians would come over to me and say, you know, I never heard of bibliotherapy, but this idea that books can serve as medicine or can heal reminds me of a time in my own life when I was going through, you know, in one instance, a woman shared with me a story of a time when she was really depressed. And she said that reading the novel, a novel by Evelyn Waugh called Brideshead Revisited, was for whatever reason the only thing that got her through it. So all of these places I was going, I was not only collecting research, but I was collecting these really rich and interesting stories about people's lives as readers and what books had meant to them, whether as medicine or as books that have inspired them or challenged them. And I just kind of thought, you know, it might be really interesting to find some way to allow people to tell their own stories about their lives as readers.
I love that. Also, having been in academia for a long time, I love the notion of that the work and the research that we do in academia has real meaning to real people in the real world. And that's what I see happened with the evolution of your creating chapters out of that research. Am I seeing that correctly?
Yeah, I think so, totally. And I hope that, you know, it's a way for people to connect with other readers and to kind of feel like, you know, maybe experiences that you've had with books aren't quite as singular as you think. And maybe, you know, sometimes reading is a very solitary act, but in some ways this podcast has allowed readers to connect and to find new books to have new experiences with. So I really hope it keeps going in that direction.
Well, I hope it does too. And before we talk a little bit more about that, I want to go back to this medicine idea, because mm-hmm. I certainly have books in my life that have healed me emotionally in times mm-hmm. when I have been in a sad place or in a confused place. And there are even books that I turn to when, you know, that I assume I'm not alone in this, but there are times when you need to cry and you can't. And
yep.
So there, for example, when I open To Kill a Mockingbird and mm-hmm. I hear the minister turn to Little Scout and say, "Stand up, Miss Jean Louise, your father's passing." Oh, Lord, I'm in tears
yep.
by thinking about it. Huh?
Yes, yes, absolutely.
So,
absolutely.
So for me, that's a part of the healing of books. There's certain poems, poetry is really healing for me particularly. And so I'm glad to know that I'm not alone and that this is a vehicle that you're using with the podcast to help bring that out. Is the hope, of course, that your dissertation will be published, I assume?
I hope so someday. Yeah. I think right now I'm just writing it kind of as we speak. I was working on it this morning, in fact. So who knows, Deb? I hope it, you know, to finish it soon and to publish it, because I think the history of the ways that people have used books to heal themselves and to deal with life is something that not only you and I can relate to, but I think most readers can relate to. So there's kind of a strange contradiction in the sense that most people have never heard of bibliotherapy, which, by the way, is still a very active form of therapy within many schools of counseling. But every reader, it seems, has had that kind of relationship with at least one book or genre of reading something and feeling healed in some ways, in ways that you can articulate and maybe not. So Chapters is trying to help tell those stories, but also just tell the stories of people's relationships with books, even if they're not necessarily having been healed by a book, but, you know, just a great affinity for a book or a realization about your life that a book helped you come to, which in a way, I guess, could be a kind of healing.
Oh, I believe it is. I believe it is. I mean, all of you who are listening to this podcast right now and who have had a reading with me, and probably most of you who have had a reading with Samantha, know that at some point during that reading we say, gee, we want to recommend a book to you. About mm-hmm. whatever we're talking about. I mean, we recommend books to people all the time, and not necessarily some of it for healing, some of it for learning, but forever. You know, we just think you ought to be able to read all the time. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So tell us about the kind of folks that you're interviewing on Chapters, because it's not just, well, it's just plain old folks, as you and I say. So tell us about the folks that you're interviewing.
We're interviewing people from really all walks of life. You know, I've done some visits. I'm willing to come to bookstores and public libraries, and just really any reader who wants to share their story is exactly the kind of person that we want to have on the show. So you don't have to be famous. You don't have to be you know, anyone highfalutin. If you're a reader and books have meant something in your life and have shaped who you've become and who you're becoming, then those are exactly the kind of people that we want to speak to. What Taylor, who's my partner on the show, and I hope we can communicate is a sense that every person's story matters. And we really do value each reader and their experience. And I think sometimes people think that their lives aren't important enough or valuable or interesting enough to share with other people. But, you know, those are exactly the kind of people we talk to, because I can't tell you how many interviews I've done with, you know, we've had on, I'm trying to think of all the different people we've had on. We've had on, you know, students, parents, people working in all kinds of industries. And at the beginning of the interview, before I start recording, somebody will usually say to me, you know, Mary, I think I can talk about one book. I think I only have about, you know, 5 minutes of material, so I'm really sorry, but this episode's only going to be 5 minutes long, and then that's it. And I say, okay, we'll see. And then sure enough, you know, I end up having these conversations with people that could easily go beyond an hour. Just, you know, they think of all the ways, the different books that have touched them at different times in their lives. So we're really looking for anyone who feels like books have really impacted their life.
How very wonderful. And not necessarily something that's impacting their life right now, but something that was a real pivotal moment for them, or just something that brought them joy as a child, even, for example, right?
Right. And I actually give you an example from a recent episode I recorded that, you know, I, growing up, was never someone who read comic books. I don't know about you, Deb.
No,
but,
didn't do it.
Yeah, me neither. And I recently recorded an interview with someone named Rob, and he's an accountant, again, no one famous, but he said to me, you know, I could come on and talk about comic books. You haven't had anyone talk about that yet. And I said, I'd love it. And he came on and told this really beautiful story about how when he was a child, like 5 years old, his father took him to a corner store and told him that, you know, Superman had been his favorite superhero when he was his age. And he bought him his first Superman comic book that day at the corner store. And throughout his life, he has returned to Superman for reasons that he doesn't even fully recognize as like a symbol for him, as an important a thing to reread, all these different comic books. And his father passed away just a few years ago. And, you know, he basically had a really beautiful reflection about how Superman reemerged in his life at that time as something to help him through his grief, because it was a relationship he had with his father through these comic books. It was a thing that they talked about all their lives. And even the fact that, you know, his father died of a heart attack, and Superman's, I guess, earthly father dies of a heart attack, was a connection that meant something to him that helped him to grieve.
How wonderful. How wonderful.
Yeah.
You know, I've always said to students and to everybody I know, it doesn't matter what you read, just read. I don't
mm-hmm.
care what you read. The back of a cereal box will work, but read.
Right. And sometimes you don't know what's going to be the best medicine for you in terms of what books you need at your life. You know, you and I have talked a lot about the fact that sometimes books enter our lives at moment, the exact right moment, in ways that we don't fully understand. And part of the challenge of bibliotherapy when doctors and librarians were trying to make bibliotherapy a hard science in the early 20th century, something they really struggled with was how to be able to prescribe broadly for, say, hundreds of patients in a hospital. And the challenge that they found was that they ultimately couldn't do it, because you could prescribe the same book to 100 people, but it's going to reach each one of those people in different ways. And you can't predict how a single person is going to read and take in and be healed by a different book, the same book in some instances.
True. Absolutely. And, you know, that's true with music, too.
Mm-hmm.
Realized a long time ago that people listen to music differently. They don't hear the same thing when they listen to music that everybody else hears, you know. And I think that's absolutely true with books. You know, on my Witches of the Shore Facebook page, every weekday morning, I recommend a book. And
mm-hmm.
it's interesting to see what kind of responses I get from my followers on the book of the day. And if I post a book that a lot of people know about, like Scott Cunningham's work, for example. I get a lot of, oh, he was my introduction into paganism or whatever. And if I post, when I posted The Witch of Blackbird Pond, I had a lot of reminiscence, a lot of folks who did exactly what you and I did. I read this book in the fourth grade, and I still love it, you know. If I post something that folks aren't familiar with, some people will say, oh, I'll try this. I don't know, but I'll try it. Other folks just pass it by. But I think sometimes it depends on the title, it depends on the author, and certainly the subject matter. When I publish Mary Stewart's Arthurian legend series on the page, I get a lot of people who say, as I said, I know that place. I know I've lived in that place and time in another lifetime.
Wow.
And somehow or another, that resonates. So you never know which it's going to be, whether it's author or title or characters or location or whatever, that's going to resonate with or not with somebody. And we all, I think, have that individual and unique and singular experience with a book that I would see, which is exactly what you're saying, would make that very difficult to kind of standardize in some way. It's not penicillin, you know?
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And I think that that's what's made it, sometimes in medical settings, kind of a challenge. Actually, that's how I came to bibliotherapy. That's how I even thought of bibliotherapy as something that I wanted to research or was interested in, was kind of my own experiences. I was once in a hospital for a long period of time, and I asked them if they had any books there. And they said, well, I think we have a cart somewhere with books on it. Let us go check. And they came back to me and said, well, unfortunately, we had some magazines, but people stole those. And we had some Stephen King novels, but they're all gone. So all we have are these three books left. And the three books were Fran Drescher's cancer memoir, Gilda Radner's cancer memoir, and a book about the JFK assassination. And this was in, and this was in a part of the hospital where a lot of serious things were happening, you know, people were passing away and all these very serious things. And I kind of remember thinking, who would think that someone in a hospital would be comforted by these kinds of books? But maybe in some instances, that's the kind of thing people want to read. You know, maybe if you have cancer, it comforts you to read about someone who's going through a similar experience. I don't know.
I don't know either, but I can't imagine that would be comforting.
Yeah, I don't know if the JFK assassination is really comforting to anyone at any time. But
I don't think so either. Oh, my golly. You know, as we've been talking and thinking about books that impacted us, sometimes it's not big books. I love Anne Morrow Lindbergh's Gifts from the Sea.
Mm-hmm.
I bet I have owned, I'm not exaggerating, I bet I've owned 50 copies of that book, and I give it away.
Wow.
You know,
wow.
Give it away. Here, you know, try this. And I don't know, sometimes it speaks to people, sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes this is me shooting on somebody, you know. But it's those little books. It's like, I love The Rubaiyat by Omar Khayyam. I just love that. So I think those are the kinds of things that would be comforting to me. As a result of your asking those questions, did anything change in the hospital?
I don't think so. I think, and in fact, when I left the hospital after that day, I had, in my time there, ended up reading all three of those books. And when I left, I used to tease them that they had those books out there. And when I left, the nurses signed the copy of the JFK assassination book and gave it to me. So I have that as a little memento to my time there. But it certainly, you know, got me thinking about, okay, well, I know books have been healing in my life, because when I was going through that time, you know, I was living through a long period of illness and certainly was reading a lot of books and turning, as you said, to some books. You know, it struck me when you said that when you want to cry and can't, you go to a certain book and you know that it will provoke that response in you. And I think that, you know, I know in my own life as a reader, when I've needed to deal with certain emotions or if things are happening you don't understand, books can be a kind of comfort food too. So that's definitely how I related to books then. But I don't I think patient libraries still exist, but I think now they have to compete with, you know, video games and TV and all these other things that didn't really exist when those things started. So it'd be interesting to see what kind of books are available. I will say that the most popular book by far on our podcast in terms of offering comfort to people have been the Harry Potter books, which I know are also something that have been important to you, right, Deb?
Oh, let me tell you, The Half-Blood Prince is on the kitchen table right now.
Oh, wow, really?
Oh, yeah. I read three books at a time. There's one in the bedroom, there's one in the den, and there's one on the kitchen table. And one of those three is always one of the Harry Potter books.
Oh, wow.
I just read them all the time.
Yeah, yeah. And I think you're not alone in recent weeks. And, you know, you see a lot of writing in different magazines and online things about what Harry Potter has meant and continues to mean to readers and offering comfort in all kinds of situations. So it's really amazing.
Oh, absolutely. I am so grateful for those books in so very many ways. And I think that there are, and you know, everybody who listens to this podcast knows how I feel about Harry Potter and the truths that they teach. You know, I think Dumbledore is so very wise, for example, you know, and mm-hmm. very simple things that he says. You know, it's our choices who make us who we are.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, I agree. Isn't that interesting that Harry Potter, and I wonder if that transcends age.
I think so. I mean, I think, you know, I'm 30, and I remember being in high school and being assigned Harry Potter when I was a freshman in high school. It was still, you know, it's just starting to become the fever pitch that it became. But we've had, you know, older readers on the show who talk about Harry Potter, and, you know, I've had, you know, like little kids obviously talk about Harry Potter too. So I think it really goes, its appeal is as broad as can be in terms of age groups. So it's kind of amazing.
Isn't that wonderful? And I think maybe that's one of the tests of a book, you know?
Exactly.
And those young adult books or children's books are indeed some of the most enduring in my life. There's a wonderful book, Catherine Marshall, whose husband was the chaplain of the Senate for many years, was a devout Christian writer, and she wrote a book years ago called Christie. It's a young adult book about a young woman who leaves her very comfortable, well-to-do home in Asheville, North Carolina, and travels to this backwoods rural community in the mountains of Tennessee where, you know, the feuding and the fighting and all of that stuff goes on. And I love the book because, not because of Christy, she was a great little character, but there is a wise Quaker woman in the book whose name is Alice Henderson. Isn't that interesting? I'm back to Quakers again like I was with The Witch of Blackbird Pond. But Miss Alice is this wise, wise woman who has great things to say. And the messages and the lessons that I learned from those books are also ones that have stayed with me forever. You know?
Yeah. I think something that struck me doing all these interviews is how much the books that we read in childhood and adolescence are so foundational to who we become, or at least, looking back in hindsight, so many people imagine that the books they read when they were children were so important to who they became. And I often begin by asking, what's your earliest memory of reading? And then one of the other early questions I usually get to is, you know, most people say my parents read to me growing up and that was so important. And then when they learn to read themselves, you know, what are the first books you remember thinking, these books are mine, you know, this book belongs to me, it's really important to who I am. And those books are the ones that people get very emotional about talking about, you know, whether it be things like The Witch of Blackbird Pond or A Tree Grows in Brooklyn or Babysitter's Club or Harry Potter or whatever it may be. You know, these early books that you read by yourself and allow you to imagine what you would like your life to be about or what kind of person you want to be. These are books that continually seem to be so, so important.
And feed your spirit and feed your soul.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they
really
do. Yeah,
exactly.
And I've talked on this show a lot about back in the days when I was just beginning to walk this path, and there wasn't much of a path to walk. But back in the early 1970s, the there was a dearth of books on anything that we have come to believe as psychic or spiritual directions in our lives now. And I blamed a part of my inability to find anything about this world on the fact that I lived in a place that we just didn't have bookstores like that. But mm-hmm. it seemed to be true in all around me, and it was just a time. And then there came that great shift in the late 70s and early 80s. And I remember one of the very first books I read about psychic phenomenon or spirituality like this in any way was Ruth Montgomery's biography of Jean Dixon in the late 60s. And, wow, I devoured that book. I still own that little weird little paperback book after all this time, because that book led to, oh, who is Arthur Ford? And I need to know more about Edgar Cayce. And so, you know, one book leading to another. And for me, that's a huge, wonderful part of reading, is that one book leads me to another.
Yes, exactly. And I don't know if you found this with that book, but if you go back and reread a book that what you read and was so important to you as a teenager, as a young adult, and you find yourself reading a completely different book because you've changed.
Yeah, because you've changed and shifted and learned things differently. Yeah, that's absolutely true. I'll give you an example of that. I've been purging some bookshelves, which has not been an easy task, I have to tell you.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and it's taken me a very long time because you have to stop and reminisce and read and stuff. And in about 1968 or so, a young man who was a student at Columbia wrote a book called The Strawberry Statement. And it was about student demonstrations and uprisings against the Vietnam War and the connection with academia and research and government defense contracts. That's what the book was about. So I learned when I reread it a couple of weeks ago, when I read it initially in 1968, it was just like, oh, yay, here's another hippie radical person who's against the war and said funny things like, hey, do you know what communists do? They grow up and fall in love and have babies sometimes, I swear to God. That's the lines of the book.
That's amazing. Wow.
But I read an entirely different book, lo, these many years later, you know, what
right.
almost. You know, 40 years later, 50 years later.
Yeah, I mean, I found that with, actually, my best friend is a huge fan of this podcast, so I'd love to say hi to Allison, my best friend. And we are both historians, and we both were drawn to history in large part because of the American Girl books. I don't know if you've heard of this, Deb, but it's a company that made dolls that are from different times in American history, and they commissioned a series of books for each doll that told her story.
Oh, nice.
And in the back of each book, they had real historical evidence. So one doll is named Molly, and she lived during World War II, and you learned about her family and Victory Gardens and, you know, her father going off to war, et cetera. And in the back of each book, it would say, and here's some real pieces of that history of that time. Here's what it would have been like to live in that time. And that is what really inspired my imagination to be a historian as a young 9 or 10 year old reader. And the same for my best friend. And when we met, we were reminiscing about these books. And one of the books is set during the American Revolution, and the doll's name is Felicity. And we were trying to piece together what her story was. And we had somehow convinced ourselves that she lived in Boston, that she was friends with John Adams and his family and all these different things. And then we just happened to look it up. And sure enough, she was raised on a horse farm in Virginia or something. We'd completely gotten it wrong. And totally misremembered the book. But in this kind of interesting way, it was like we went back and reread those books, and they were totally different books now as adults. But it also allowed us this really beautiful way to connect. Like, books can also allow you to connect to other people.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. Yeah. And you know, I don't think I have friends who don't read. And I mean that seriously, in that's kind of a common ground that most of my friends and I share, is this sharing of books and stories that way. And we love to live in those other worlds, and it's a great thing.
Yeah.
I want to talk, we're almost at the halfway point here, Mary, and what I want to do is talk some more about and I'll shut up because it's, I really want people to hear about what you're doing with the folks that you're interviewing and how folks can connect with you to be interviewed and what that might be like. But I do want to tell folks about our wonderful advertiser, which is Audible Books. And if you are a psychic teacher listener, you can go to audibletrial.com/psychicteachers and sign up for a free month's trial with Audible Books. And and we, of course, get some benefit from that, and we really appreciate that. And you get a free book for a month. And if you don't like it, the cool thing is you can send it back, and they'll send you another one, and it just keeps going. So it's a great thing. audibletrial.com/psychicteachers. And the book I want to recommend today is just a great book, I think. It's entitled The Spirituality of Imperfection, Storytelling and the Search for Meaning by Catherine Ketchum and Ernest Kurtz, K-U-R-T-Z. The Spirituality of Imperfection is the name of the book I would like to recommend to folks today from Audible Trial. And also, as always, of course, if you are interested in learning about my services or Samantha's services, you can reach us on our website at our websites at SamanthaFay.com and DebBowen.com. Thank you for that. So tell us about how to connect with you, Mary, and how folks might be a guest on your show and, you know, just talk to you about it.
Wonderful. So we have a website, www.chapterspod.com, where visitors can come and listen to all our past episodes and also get some information about being on the show themselves. There's a tip sheet on the website that gives you some tips and some things to think about if you want to appear on the show. Like, for example, you may find it useful to try to write down some books that have meant a lot to you at different times before our conversation. And also, you can contact us with any questions and to request to be on the show. We'd absolutely love to hear from people. You can also find us, our show, on the iTunes store by searching Chapters Podcast. And you can contact me directly on the website. And also, if you're on Twitter or Facebook, you can find us on there as well. On Twitter, it's at Chapters Pod. And you can find me on Twitter at Mary Mahoney 123. So I've thrown a lot of information at you, but if you start at our website, www.chapterspod.com, that's a great place to start.
And I'll put that on our Facebook page for you as well, Mary.
Oh, thank you so much, Deb. I so appreciate
sure.
it.
Of course. So what would make me, just little old me, think I have anything to say and would be willing to be on your podcast?
Well, I think, you know, if you've ever considered yourself a reader, then you are already qualified to be on the show. Because whether you realize it or not, the ways that you've connected with the books you've read and the stories that you tell yourself about what the books you've read have meant to you are things that can allow you to connect with other readers and help us and the people who listen to the show really think about what reading can mean and what books can do. So you don't have to have won a lot of awards in your life or be a celebrity or any of those kind of things for your life to be meaningful and for the reading that you've done to be meaningful to people who listen to our show.
Wonderful. How, you know, you and I were talking before the show about NPR's StoryCorps project
mm-hmm.
and how wonderful that is, that it does exactly what your podcast does, is it allows just ordinary folks to talk about things that go on in their lives that are important to them in some way, in some kind of context on NPR. And I don't know how they find their people, but I know for a fact that many of the folks who listen to Psychic Teachers are avid readers. I mean, who can outread me 3 books to 1. And so I would really urge you that if you want to talk about the books that mean something to you and how you've evolved on your spiritual journey, your psychic journey, just life, something that really impacted you at a really important turning point in your life, you know, talk to Mary about being on this podcast. I had tons of fun being on your show, you know.
Yeah, I had tons of fun when you came on too, Deb. I think your episode is the one I hear most about on, actually. People are, yeah, so fascinated by you, and everyone wants to be your friend, me included, Deb. So after listening to your episode. But, you know, I just want to add, too, that I think just as a disclaimer, I would also say that, you know, the books that you can come on to talk about, and by the way, I do some of the interviews in person, but I also do a lot by Skype, so you don't have to worry about, you know, where you're at and where I'm at. But also how you define books and reading, you know, we define that very broadly. So we have had people come on and talk about all kinds of genres of books, whether it be spiritual books for people who love biographies or science fiction or comic books, as I mentioned earlier, but also gossip magazines, novels, so-called great works. So it can really be anything and everything. We're interested to hear about it.
Isn't that interesting? Gossip magazines, you said?
That's right.
I'll have to go back and listen to that episode.
Yep.
Oh, wow. How about that?
Yeah.
I can't tell you the last time I looked at a gossip magazine.
Well, yeah. It's one of my secret shames, Deb. I actually do like some gossip magazines. But
okay.
I think a commonality amongst all of that is that, you know, there's this really great quote by a writer I love named Joan Didion, and who may be familiar with Deb, but she wrote at one point, "We tell ourselves stories in order to live." And I think that no matter the genre, the reading that we do across our lives gives us a kind of language that we can use to tell our own stories. And my hope with this podcast is that I can give people a space and basically get out of the way for them to tell their own stories of, that they have, you know, written themselves to help them live their lives through the books that they've read.
That's wonderful. That is absolutely wonderful. I have a confession. One of my secret goals in life is to learn to write like Joan Didion.
Whoa.
Well, yeah, good luck with that, I'm sure. But, you know, somebody else.
I think it's a great goal, Deb.
Well, yeah. But somebody said that to her at some point. And her response was, "Really? I've always wanted to write like William James." Doesn't that sound like Joan Didion? You know?
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. Have you read? Have you read her? Well, we had someone on the show named Heather Parker who actually talked about beach reading, and she said she only reads Henry James on the beach. Like it's something special for her to only read Henry James on the beach. So it's interesting to think about. Like, is there a place where you only read a specific author or book? You know, that's special to you. Yeah, but writing like Joan Didion, that's quite a goal, Deb. I think you can do it. I'm rooting for you.
I don't think so, but thank you, Mary. But, you know, that's interesting. I don't have just beach reading, but I do have certain times of the year reading.
Like what?
Well, the week between Christmas and New Year's, I reread the Narnia Chronicles.
Wow.
Hmm?
Yeah.
And I've done that for years, but I reread all seven of them, and I read them in order. I don't cheat. So I read the Narnia Chronicles that week. In summer, when the first true ripe tomatoes start coming off of the vines, I make a gooey tomato sandwich and I sit down and I reread To Kill a Mockingbird.
Wow.
I read that in summer. The fall, I read a wonderful book called In the Shadow of the Rainbow, which is a great story about it's a true story about a man and his connection to a particular wolf. So I have seasonal books like that. And then I have escape reading that I go to mostly in spring and summer, although I don't know about necessarily on the beach. And it's a series of murder mysteries by John D. MacDonald, and the lead character is a man named Travis McGee. And there are 21 of those books, and I love them all and read them all. Travis McGee,
wow.
John D. MacDonald. So, you know.
That's really wonderful.
Yeah, it is fun. Okay, Mary, so let me ask you this question. If somebody wanted to talk to you or email you, they could do that right off of your website, right?
Right.
Okay. is there a place on your website, and I'm sorry I haven't been lately, but is there a place on your website where you might give folks not only the tip sheet you were talking about, but just to help people think about why their story about their relationship with books would be important and to kind of help them get over the fear of perhaps being on the air?
Yeah, well, that's something that we talk about in the tip sheet itself. And so one of the tips that I mentioned before about making a list of books is something that I think from talking to people who've been on the show has been really helpful to people who do get nervous about being interviewed. Because, you know, believe it or not, I'm actually a pretty shy person, despite the fact my choice to start a podcast and
tell me about it on the air.
Yeah. But so, you know, I'm very conscious of the fact that I really want to make people comfortable when they're on the show, as I'm sure, and I know you do, Deb, being on your show. So something that I talk about in that tip sheet is that making a list of books is really helpful because then you can have that with you when we have our conversation. So you kind of know ahead of time that you have something to look at if you're nervous or to jog your memory. And something that I say to everyone before every interview is that, you know, there are no rules and you're not going to be graded. There's nothing to worry about in terms of, you know, performing in any way for me or for the listeners of this podcast. What really matters most to me is that everyone who comes on the show feels really safe and really valued. So I always say to people beforehand, you know, I understand that we're going to be talking about your life, and I know how vulnerable that might make you. So anything that comes up across the conversation, and sometimes things come up that you don't expect are going to come up, if you don't feel comfortable talking about it, even if you brought it up, just say, you know, I'd like to move on or whatever, and we will absolutely move on. So, and also every episode is unique. So there are no rules. If you want to talk about one book in particular or an author that's meant a lot to you, you entirely have the freedom to do that. So every episode is very unique, just like every person is unique. And that's kind of by design. So, you know, I certainly try to do everything I can to go out of my way to make people feel really welcome on our show because I know that it's, you know, talking about reading is a kind of surprisingly vulnerable thing, and I want people to feel really comfortable doing that, even shy people like me. So if anyone has any tips that they think will help shy people on the show, like, please feel free to share those with me, but also just know that I will do whatever I can to make you feel safe sharing your story.
That's lovely. And I really would invite you all who are listening to think about doing this, to think about visiting with Mary. I know for me, as a guest on your show, and even though I thought I had my list together and I did all the things that you recommend we do, and I realized as you and I were talking that there really was a running theme in the books that I had chosen to talk about on your show, and that I really was describing and hearing myself describe a part of my life that I hadn't conceptualized as being a complete whole in a step and a phase in my journey. And that was a gift that your podcast gave to me.
Oh, that's so nice, Deb. Thank you. Yeah. I mean, I really hope that this show can do that for people. That I think, you know, we're living in a time right now when there is so much focus on the individual and the self, like taking selfies and all this kind of stuff. But at the same time, there's a real lack, it seems, of introspection or really thinking about, you know, why am I here? What is this for? What has my life been about? And what can it be about? And what can it mean? And in a weird way, people have, being on this show at the end of the interview, will sometimes say to me, like, like something came up for me that I never thought about my life. Or, you know, this made me think about this time in my life in a really different way. So it's interesting to see where those interviews kind of, what they do for the people themselves.
True. You know, as you were talking about that, I was thinking about one of my favorite authors who died last year, and that is Pat Conroy. And I adored Pat Conroy. I was very blessed to have met him once at a bookseller's convention in Atlanta after a book was published. And I stood in line to speak to him. And the closer I got to him, the more frightened I became. It was like, oh, my God, who do I think I am to talk to Pat Conroy? And so when it was finally my turn, I thanked him for the books he had written. I said, but I have to tell you, there's one particular passage in The Prince of Tides that describes my childhood, and I have tried to write that paragraph a zillion times, and I can't ever come close to writing it as well as you did. And he said, oh, what paragraph was that? And I quoted it to him verbatim.
Whoa.
And he looked at me and he said, that really was a pretty good paragraph, wasn't it? And I thought, well, you know, here we go, you know.
Wow.
But he did. He captured in one paragraph in The Prince of Tides the story of my childhood. And I've used it many times in teaching and as a teaching tool. And what a gift that was. And he also is an abiding connection for me to a friend of mine who is now dead, who she and I both love to read, and we shared a lot of books, and she was a voracious reader. And she always, her comment about Pat Conroy was that his philosophy of writing was, why use one word when 50 would do?
That's great.
It's true about Pat Conroy, you know.
Mm-hmm,
certainly
mm-hmm.
True about him. So that particular book gives me a moment in time about my own life and a connection to a lovely friend as well. And I think that we all have those stories if we can give ourselves permission to share them. And I would love to see that folks do that on your show. So I have a question for you. What are you reading?
Right now?
Yeah.
Well, I have, like you, Deb, I have a bunch of books going at one time. I keep a volume. I don't know if you're familiar with Mary Oliver, the poet Mary Oliver, but I love her poetry, and I actually keep a couple volumes of it by my bed. So before I even get out of bed in the morning, I will reach over and randomly select one of her poems, and I find that it just puts me in a really positive and really grateful frame of mind to start my day. So I really love doing that. So I'm perpetually reading her work. And I'm also reading a biography of Queen Victoria that my best friend gave me for Christmas, which I'm very much enjoying. It's very good. And I recently just finished a memoir by Julia Child about the years that she spent in France, which was also very good. I recommend it. It's called My Years in France. And that's what I'm trying to think about right now. I'll spare you the things I'm reading for my dissertation, but but I'm actually been reading a lot of accounts from the 20s and the 30s of people in mental hospitals who have been experimented on with bibliotherapy and the kinds of books that help them and those that don't. So I'm reading that every day too lately, but yeah, so it's a real grab bag, Deb. But I highly recommend Mary Oliver to anyone and everyone. I think her work is wonderful. And the other books I mentioned are very good, too. What are you reading, Deb?
I am currently reading, well, like I said, Half-Blood Prince is on the kitchen table. And next to my bed is Clinical Parapsychology, Extrasensory Exceptional Experiences by Teresa Kelly.
Wow.
Where she looks at how the brain functions in a psychological connection to paranormal exposure. Okay, so that's the one next to the bed. And then in the den is Witchcrafting by Phyllis Kuroe.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. And it's a lovely book on how to create ritual and how to connect to spirit and other ways of looking at the concept of magic.
Wow, that sounds cool.
So that's what I'm doing at the moment.
Just some light reading.
Yeah, a little light reading. I just finished a book entitled Downsizing the Family Home. I do not recommend that. It's a great book. Let me rephrase that. I recommend it if you've got a new downsizing of the family home. And my sister and I are doing some things with some things that belong to my parents, but it is not necessarily joyous reading, although the woman who wrote it did a nice job of trying to make it as light and as humorous given the subject matter as she could. So,
yeah, that sounds very tough.
It is. It really is. Oh my golly. Okay, Mary. So let's tell people again how to connect with you here at the end. I want to be sure that folks understand how they can be in touch with you, and not only to be on the show, but certainly to just and that's something I recommend is, you know, listen to Mary's show and listen to other folks' stories, and that might also help inspire you to contact her and be on this show. So tell them again, Mary, how they can connect with you.
Oh, thank you so much. Yes, so if you want to listen to our show and check it out and see if it's something you might be interested in being on, you can find our show on the iTunes Store under by searching Chapters Podcast, and you can also listen to every episode on our website, www.chapterspod.com. And on that website, you can listen to all of our past episodes. You can look at our blog and see links to every book that's been mentioned on the episode so far. And most importantly, you can contact us if you'd like to tell your story on the podcast. So please be in touch with me on that website if you have any questions or would be interested in sharing your story, which we would love to hear. And you can also find us on Facebook. We have a Facebook page, Chapters Podcast, where you can also contact us if you're a Facebook person, or Twitter at Chapters Pod.
Yay, wonderful. So any parting comments or words you might want to share with people, Mary, about your work or books in general or whatever you want to say?
Well, I would just first like to thank you and Samantha so much for your support of the podcast and of my work. You know, it's really meant a lot to me, and I'm so grateful for that. And I would just say to everyone listening that your story matters and that I'd certainly love to hear it. And, you know, basically just to encourage everyone to keep reading, because I do think that it's something that is really vital to who we are.
Absolutely. Read, read, read. Always read. And then tell your own story and your connection to it. Mary, thank you so very, very much for being my guest this week. I am just delighted and honored to have you and just love the work that you're doing with connecting people and books and history. What a great thing. So thank you for the work that you're doing as well. Thank you also very much for being with me this week with Mary. Samantha and I will be back with you next week, and we hope that in the meantime you have a great week, and everyone be the light. Take care, folks. Good night.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.